Hello, welcome to It's Not My Fault, DLG Podcast. It's Not Popular. Episode 250. 250 episodes.
Jesus Christ, that's too many episodes.
Yeesh. My name is Justin.
And mine's Helen.
And on this 250th disc, maybe you consider it's like a mini anniversary with how many episodes this is, and we only record like twice a month. Or maybe three times, depending on how the month falls.
Yeah, we've only been doing this for, is it 9 or 10 years now?
We even start almost 10 years, I think. I think it was to the 2017, I think, or we started podcast in 2017.
Yeah,
I'm not looking it up. At least right now.
I just know that. Let's see. I'm fairly sure that we started.
I started coming on the podcast
before June 2017 because I moved then. I think I remember doing it at my previous place then. But anyway, yeah, too many episodes, and there's still stuff going on every week in anime and manga. Last episode, kind of quiet. This week, so much weird news, so much unhappy news. Just the universe is trying to balance it out, and I do not appreciate it, frankly.
We thought we took a break from conventions, but no, we got like really some big news and then some really just really depressing news, to be quite honest with everybody listening.
Yeah,
and we'll get to in a bit.
Anime NYC is next weekend, right?
Yep, it is. So
yeah, because I think I saw an email from Yen Press being like, "Where will you be next weekend?" I'm like, volunteering at the National Book Festival. I'm going to be in a different gigantic convention center with questionable Wi-Fi and cell service. The difference for me is that, however, I'm not paying like over $100 to be there.
Ooh, yeah, unfortunately for all the people who have to do that.
Justin casually dangles his press pass around.
But I do have responsibilities, so we'll see what those responsibilities entail as the week builds up to it. But anyways,
with great perks come great responsibilities.
Before we get to all the really tough news over the past 2 weeks, I know we're up to some stuff. For me, I would have talked about this last episode, but Netflix decided to drop Great Teacher Onizuka just out of nowhere, so I went to jump to that. But you know, if you've been listening to the podcast, I have been like, where is the Infinity Castle movie on Crunchyroll? Where's it been, Sony? Where's it been at? Why are you keeping it in theaters? You know you want to put it on there. I've been banging the drum for that. You had Chainsaw Man. I still have not watched Chainsaw Man movie. I will get to it eventually. I just have not done it.
I was wondering, if you were boycotting it until Demon Slayer was on, or if you were just busy.
No, it was just accidental, and really getting motivated to watch it. Yeah, I will watch it. Just haven't motivated myself to watch Reze just yet, but I will. But I've been yelling about Demon Slayer Infinity Castle at some point getting on Crunchyroll, and I said I would watch it exactly when it drops, and it dropped, I think, somewhere around the end of January or close to July, I should say. I didn't get to watch it because Onizuka dropped. But like, I finally got around to watching Infinity Castle, and it is an infinity amount of characters and infinity amount of castles. It's once again more Demon Slayer. I will say I did like the Akaza backstory. It's been a long since I read the manga, so I'm not sure if I would have preferred it over the manga version coming to the movie, but I thought that part was well done. Other than that, it was just the same old Demon Slayer. Lots of decent action, or at least good action, lots of flashbacks, and once again, it dials up the flashbacks. Some to, I feel like, an unnatural degree. Again, if I went back to the manga, like, did the manga do this like this?
Because from what I recall, Infinity Castle is like a significant chunk of the manga in general.
And I know we poo-poo about Demon Slayer doing flashbacks. It is very much a shonen type of trait to just flashback in certain key moments, especially battles for some reason. So it's not an exclusively Demon Slayer thing. But it just really just, you notice it really heavily in this film. And I'm curious how it went in theaters. But it wasn't bad. Like, I personally didn't mind it for the most part. Just some parts just took me out of it. But I did get to the, obviously, towards the end of it, where we had our main heroes facing off against Akaza, one of the demons, obviously, and one of the upper, the really strong ones. Man, it was a pain to take out.
Is that the one who's, The one that kind of looks like Tanjiro, or,
Not real. No.
Okay, that's different.
That's
one,
later. Later one. It's the one who has the, he faced,
Listen,
Goku, the flank. Yeah, it's been a while, right?
Yeah, I finished the manga, and I read flame a little guy. Bit more of the anime, and I watched a little bit more of the anime, and I went, you know what, I'm good.
Remember Flame Guy, and then he faced off against a really strong demon?
Yeah, I just remember, like, the story built up to so much hype for him, and then just did not deliver on the hype, you know, just kind of a...
I would argue that it actually just... It would, again, just displays just the level of just how hopeless these are. Hashira was really strong. The demons are somehow stronger. So I think it just more or less sets the tone for that. But I can understand why it feels that way. But yeah, that backstory for Akaza was done really well in the anime. No crying rate like that, nothing like that. But I thought that was well done. And again, it's just a case of, all right, watch Infinity Castle Part 1. There's obviously lots of things they've dangled. Obviously, more demons they got to kill and take care of. More demons they got to show up that the Hashira got to face. So, Part 2. Looking forward to that being on Control in 2028.
Is it going to be only two movies, or is it going to take more than two movies to adapt the whole arc? Because, like I said, I seem to recall it taking a while. Okay, yeah, y'all are screwed.
So, we know that there's going to be two more movies. At least I believe there's going to be two more movies. But whether it actually completes the whole Infinity Castle saga, I have no clue. Don't know. And this movie was already pretty long. Mm-hmm. I think it was like almost, like it was 2 hours and 37 minutes. So
So this is the Hobbit of anime movies.
I was going to say the Twin Towers, but I guess, I mean the Twin Towers. The Two Towers, the Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Going there.
Well, no, I was thinking more along the lines of The Hobbit was turned into three movies and unnecessarily long each time.
I thought you were going there. I didn't realize it's been a while since I thought about The Hobbit, so I didn't think it was that long.
I've been catching up on podcasts and listening to Annie Gamers One talk about the Lord of the Rings anime movie recently, and so I've just had Lord of the Rings on my mind for like the past 18 hours, maybe.
Okay, that probably is why. But okay, yeah, I guess we could equate The Hobbit and Demon Slayer Infinity Castle and this Infinity Castle saga with that. We can go with that for now.
And I did send you on Discord a funny meme that I saw earlier today about shonen manga, shonen anime, so.
Oh, great. Let me quickly see it. Let me quickly pop it up once I find my arrow on my laptop.
Once I find how to use Discord on my laptop, which I am currently using to record this.
I think I saw this on Twitter too. I think this I seen this with the Kogi. I think I saw that on Twitter too. I just didn't look that closely at it. It's funny.
Get out of the shonen aisle.
But I will quickly pivot over to another shonen series, into Detective Conan Collection 3, which I also didn't get a chance to talk about because Onizuka again showed up out of nowhere and just decided to. I take that back. I watched obviously Onizuka, but the rest of the collection didn't drop till August 1st. So
the rest of the Conan collection, that is.
Yeah, volume 3. So I finished all that. So once again, more FBI shenanigans, more of Conan getting in trouble with the Black Organization. And this man is just putting it. Okay, I say man, he's obviously not a kid, but this man is putting himself in so much danger.
This child.
Dangerous situations. This sassy, cocky. Oh, I should point it out.
Who is this sassy lost child?
He is sassy enough, but in this freaking collection, he is like twice like, oh, these guys are pointing a toy gun at me. I can totally tell it's a toy gun. It's obviously fake. You think you're gonna actually fool me with a fake gun? Oh, and then there's one other case where there's this slasher character or a slasher guy. He's trying to hide that he's the slasher and everything, but Conan obviously figures it out. And then he's trying to, obviously a spoiler here, but the slasher trying to run away from the cops. He gets in his car. The cops are like banging the door. Open the door. Get out of here. Slasher's just like, yeah, you guys suck. I'm getting away. Turns on the ignition, about to put the pedal to the metal. Then that little sassy little child is in the under the pedal with this.
In the wheel well, then.
He's in there with the knockout watch that knocks people out, like the detective, like Kogoromori, the famous watch, with that little smile on his face, go to sleep. And then of course the slasher falls right on the on the reel and onto the honk sound, so you get to hear the ding, and the police are just like, ah, my ears, and Kono just sitting, just like, whatever, like, it is what it is, I got the guy. I don't know why this collection got so much more of an ego.
Yeah, it's funny how you are always, like, so anti-spoiler, but you'll just, like, casually drop spoilers for everything.
Okay.
Like, I'm pretty sure, like, I am sure you are probably avoiding all news about Fortune's Weave by this point, just in case.
No. There's some Fortune's Weave that escaped containment, and I've seen it. I mean, right now, I'm just
obsessed. But otherwise, you'd be trying to avoid it.
Yeah, I'm mostly avoiding it. Yeah, I'm not, like, deep. Like, I had the Nintendo Direct, and I watched that, obviously. Other than that, I'm just mostly staying. Like, I know they got the previews from some publications.
And you're like, so I see nothing. I see nothing. Oh, hey, but do you want to hear about this other spoiler for a different series?
Look, just give me more Nun Gun. Just give me more of that. That's perfectly fine.
Justin there's wants Nun.
There's also an older lady, I mean, they kind of had like this older character and engaged little old lady, but she was actually young, in her 30s.
So we are discovering Justin's type right now. It is older nun with a gun.
What if I was actually an old lady?
Folks, can you tell that Justin went to Catholic school?
Anyway, we went from Fire Emblem from Detective Conan, but the point is, again, another fine collection, has some good stuff. Very curious. I still think there's going to be a collection 4. It's just going to be a case of what ones are going to do. Because they went through, obviously, the Black Organization. They went through the FBI. They obviously had to do the Kaito Kid. They had to bring him in the fold. My guess, and it's just a guess, they're going to try to bring over the more iconic Detective Conan stories. Some I think was voted like in a poll or whatever a long time ago. That were supposedly like the classic type of Conan series. So what those are, I'm not sure. There's one in particular I remember off the top of my head, where these characters are on the island and everything. But other than that, that's my guess. Like, they'll just go through, like, pick that for the collection, and then we'll see how it goes from there. If TMS is gonna want to do more, but we'll see. It's obviously just me guessing, but we'll see. But that is my past few weeks of anime watching and. Finally watching that Infinity Castle movie, finally.
Yeah, and mine is also something that I cut from the script last week since we just didn't have enough time. There were a couple of guests at Otakon this year for the currently airing anime, The World is Dancing. And so I re-upped my high dive sub so I could watch that and go to the panels. I did not make it to the panels because both of them were at like 10:15 in the morning and I was simply not ready and done in cosplay to go out in the morning for those, especially on Friday. And then the Saturday one was like, oh, we're going to be showing episode 6 early. And it's like, well, I only had time to watch up to episode 4. So I feel like if I go watch 6 without watching 5, this is not going to end well. So I did not actually make it out to any of the panels, unfortunately. But I have been enjoying the anime. It's set, let's see, it's the Shogun exists, so we are past the Heian period. Although I think we're still pretty early in the Edo period. And our main character, Onyasha, is like this fictionalized version of someone who actually was a very famous no playwright. I think also an actor, but I think he's best known for being a playwright. And so in the context of this story, I have no idea what the real history is. So I'm assuming most of this is like loosely historical, but not perfectly until further notice. In the context of the story, no, doesn't really exist as a genre of performance at this point. There's a couple of other things. And you can very clearly see in the story where this young character is getting the ideas from that would become very influential in No later on. I'm just having moments where I'm watching this being like, damn, this kid would have loved modern dance. Just would have absolutely loved that. Definitely a brat. Feels kind of realistic in the way that he is becoming less bratty, but not overnight. I think he's probably about 11 or so, but I need to double check. I also have no idea if this is going to adapt the entire manga or only part of it. I think someone told me that Kodansha is putting this out as part of their print-on-demand club, so I need to look into that. Since I'm definitely enjoying it, And I think I probably would enjoy it in printed form as well. But yeah, so far this is a solid show from me, and I'll talk more about it when we do our end of season wrap up in like another month-ish.
It is nice that Kodansha has the option. You can get it digitally or do the like the print club for Warriors Dancing. That's neat.
Yeah, there's God, once again, Justin, there's so many like really good anime this particular season.
Like I told you last time.
I've been saying this the whole time as well. Like a whole bunch of ones where normally like I did see people talking about this one a lot when it first aired and less now. Part of that is because my Blue Sky feed in general does not talk much about anime as my Twitter feed did in its hype, because the horrors, Justin, the horrors of living in America at this point are kind of omnipresent. But yeah, I'm hoping that this one doesn't get too overlooked by folks, since it's definitely rather unique.
Oh no, it's definitely going to, oh no, it's definitely overlooked. It's on the high dive.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, amongst our circle of, like, the absolute sickos, you know?
I mean,
I feel like my collection of absolute sickos is mostly interested in Goodbye Laura and A Witch from Mongol. So, you know, they're kind of already being busy with other prestige television this season.
You got me in a villainous Iron Walk John for me. Yeah, it's a tough season for.
Oh, no, like my Blue Sky feed is very specifically about, is absolutely obsessed with Goodbye Laura and A Witch from Mongol. Like those two specifically.
Gotcha. With the many faces, Fatima like just shows up out of nowhere, like any episode. Yeah, I can understand that.
I still need to start it though, because I've got the manga on the way, and I want to read that first, you know, before I watch the anime. But also, Genshin Impact has had its big annual update, which means I once again spent a couple of hours arguing with my iPad to get it on there. Like, listen, iPad, you have a 64GB storage. Why the fuck are we using, like, 15 gigabytes for the operating system and, like, the system cache? Like, I thought I was gonna have to do, like, a factory reset on it, practically. I had to, like, completely uninstall everything to reinstall Genshin, which admittedly, yes, is, like, 35 gigabytes at this point. But again, it is a 64GB tablet. There should be enough room for this, but between that and all of the operating system, there's just barely enough room. But I've shoved it all in. We've mostly gotten it to work. At some point, I'll probably have to get a new iPad. And whenever I say that, people ask, oh, how old is it? And I say, it's from 2019. People are like, oh, that's not too bad. Guys, that means that this iPad is 7 years old now. Like, that's pretty long for a mobile device. But so far, we are persevering. I am now playing in Fantasy, not Russia. So that's fun. I am amused that so far, we have seen the characters in power tangled up in a bureaucracy in which everyone kind of shrugs their shoulders and goes, there's nothing else to be done. And so our main character is getting involved in, like, an underground, like, not quite resistance, but, like, an underground citizens group. And I'm like, I know that we are kind of drawing on the history of this kind of being what Russia is like. But it's always very funny to think that this is made by a company in China. You know, just...
Yeah.
The social political implications are very funny when you pause to think about it. Let's see, we will see what happens this time around, because normally I make jokes about, oh yeah, I hope that the series lets me, like, I don't know, punch the moon or, you know, fight God, but we've already done all these things by this point, so it's like, I'm sure it's going to surprise me in some other ways, but I can't even keep making hyperbole, because we've already done the hyperbole by this point. Actually, no, I'm not entirely sure if I've... Okay, yeah, I have punched gods at this point in the game.
Now you gotta kick
God, quite a few of them, honestly. It's just not the main gods yet.
Okay, but you.
I'm coming for
them. You punch God. Now you guys gotta kick God.
But yeah, when one of my uncles was growing up, he was not a well behaved child, and so before he went to parties, my grandmother would make him swear, "I know fight, I know bite, I know kick." And so, so I'm feeling like that is the escalation here. I do not foresee myself biting any gods in Genshin, however. I mean, if the game gave me the prompt and the option, I'd probably take it, but, you know, just... Yeah.
Darn it, Helen.
Listen, I've come to the point where it's like, I will definitely choose the most unhinged option you give me at this point, you know, just... The answers aren't going to change anyway, so, you know, we might as well just live out our fantasy of traveling the world, fighting gods, overthrowing fate, and looking fabulous while doing so. Even if I keep fucking dying from being in a blizzard. It has been years since I've died doing that many times doing that in Genshin.
All right, Helen.
News time! And it's...
Depressing news time, actually.
Yeah, I think this first one has a quote from ANN saying, violated the human rights of the victims?
I'm not even sure where to begin with this one, because first of all, it's a really long report. That's one thing. And then, obviously, the second thing is, this is obviously very sensitive thing about to discuss. So, I guess, first of all, this is relating to the... This has been a long year. You almost could say you could forget about it, but nope, when you read it, like, oh yeah, this actually happened. So remember back in February, the Sapporo District Court handed a ruling in a civil case ordering a man, aka this was Shoichi Yamamoto, he was supposed to pay 11 million yen in damages to a woman in her 20s who claimed that Yamamoto repeatedly sexually abused and, yeah, basically all of that, while she was in a distance learning high school in Sapporo, while he was a teacher at her school. Obviously, this manga was actually, I want to make sure I get the, he's actually on the, eBay, it's not here, where did I thought I saw it here. Yeah, he was under a pen, my understanding was under a pen name, Hajime Ichiro, at the time, but no, it was actually Shoichi Yamamoto. So yes, that happened, and then after that came about, then while Shogakukan was doing their initial investigation, they realized they had another writer, or manga artist, or manga creator, and Tatsuya Matsuki, who went under a pen name, Miki Yatsunami. Obviously this is the former writer of Act Age, where he was arrested and indicted on a charge of committing a gross indecent act on a female middle school student in 2020. So that meant there was major problems, and I mean major problems, with Manga One and then Shogakukan in general, on top of everything else that has happened with them in the past couple years. So this led a lot of manga artists to just essentially boycott or have their manga removed from the Manga One app, and essentially demand that there is actually like significant changes to the organization or to the publisher in general. So it's been, I guess, a couple months, I guess we can go with 5 months and some days now. And on August 4th, we got a report, or at least we got the Shogakukan releasing their findings from reports. So the Spalnichi Annex reported that the external committee received reports of 44 incidents, including similar suspected incidents of sexual misconduct and other misconduct during the investigation through its dedicated hotlines.
Just to be clear, other incidents from different creators, not just these people we already know about.
And the incidents included misconduct from senior executives, employees, and abusing the power of their positions.
Okay, so well other people. Okay.
Yep, as well as misconduct from editors toward creatives. And then the committee had found that in some of these cases, the company actually took the correct course of action, but others, it was actually insufficient. The punishment, at least what's been presented or announced so far, is that the executive staff, which includes the CEO, managing directors, board members, and auditors, will cut their monthly salaries for a period of 3 months, and the president will reduce his salary 50% during this period, and other members will reduce their salaries by 20-30%. These are all big numbers to say this is a...
Is that money going to go anywhere, or does the company just effectively get to keep that in their bank account?
That's the question. Like, that's why I say this so far. Like, it seems... I guess it's some sort of punishment, but really it seems in general, considering there was a report of 44 incidents, really light.
It also kind of feels like the company just sort of gets to increase their own profit then if they're not having to pay out salaries, you know, more money in the bank to be earning interest and such.
Mm-hmm. And then Shogakukan is planning to enact a list of measures to prevent this type of situation occurring ever again, essentially. ANN has, again, a write-up of everything about the scribe in full description. I opted not to list all because it's kind of detailed, and that's going to really be way too long for this podcast.
This podcast could have been an article.
So you basically had to check that out before, I guess, so you can learn a little more. But here's what they formed. So they had the formation of the Sri Lankan Human Rights Policy and Human Rights Commission, expansion of human rights training and incorporated cultural reform, revised system and process for working with external creators, strengthening supervisory bodies and systems, establish and reform internal whistleblowing, reporting, and investigating systems. Again, this is all done in lists, like how they listed form. And that Chaka, I guess, stated in, I assume, Japanese, that they're just going to post a full list of proposed measures in English in the future. I am guessing it's going to be for all of them. So far, the only one that was published is the Shogaku Human Rights Policy. That's the only one that's in English. But the others aren't in English just yet. I'm not sure when it's going to be in English. I can't say I'm going to try to keep track of all that, but I will try to at least keep it in mind if we get more news about this in the future. Excuse me. But yes, again, it's more I had to leave off so many details from the actual write-up. You will have to go read it up to actually get a full sense of just how really, I guess, extensive, but then also just thinking back, just how bad was this culture in the company that they let this happen for who knows how many years. It's very, very worrisome. And really, you can just hope for the best for the victims that are involved in this. And then I guess, again, I will just put this out here that, yes, I'm not sure if I'm personally pleased about the punishment. I'm not sure it's enough. But now the main question is, what are the creators who essentially are not working for Manga One, what do they think about this? Haven't heard anything yet. And funny enough, I was thinking, I don't think I've heard back if any of the pulled works return to Manga One. Maybe we'll hear something soon. I don't know. But I guess for Shogakukan, that's all that's going to really matter to them, if the artists or manga creators are satisfied with what the findings are or the initial reporting, and what they're going to do in the future is going to be good enough.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if more established authors, like, pulling this out of nowhere, like Arakawa, since I believe she was one of the authors who pulled her stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they use their weight to stay away from the service, but perhaps Shogakukan is able to sort of force any newer authors to stay on there, being like, you know, if we don't have you on here, we can't have you on our other services, yada yada yada. So I would not be surprised if that's what happens. Definitely not guaranteed, however. It could be something else. Maybe other folks will stay away from it, and maybe readership will stay away from it, since there are so many services out there, even in English, that it's easy enough to go, well, you know, I think I'm just going to kind of keep avoiding this one. This is why I have not shopped at Target in like 3 years at this point. You know, I'm already avoiding it. Might as well just keep avoiding it, you know. Not that Target's done anything that makes me change my stance on it anytime recently, so.
And yeah, I don't really have anything else to add, so.
And then in more general news, there was a 6.8 magnitude earthquake on July 28th. It struck the Kumamoto Prefecture. And according to the Japan Times, this one had quite an impact on people. Like, there were even aftershocks that caused an explosion at a mall in Kashima. And the Japan Times also reported that Nippon Paper Industries also had some employee deaths because a smokestack collapsed during the earthquake. So 6.8 is not like the biggest earthquake out there, but certainly big enough to do plenty of damage here. And so the way that relates to this podcast is that both the Pokemon Company and Japanese musician Yoshiki have announced that they will be donating money to support the relief. Pokemon Company has said it has donated about 100 million yen to Kumamoto Prefecture, the Japanese Red Cross Society, and other organizations. Yoshiki announced he has also donated 10 million yen to the Japanese Red Cross Society, all for relief efforts from the earthquake. So I imagine that's probably going to be helping people stay in hotels, pay for equipment to help clean up things, replace things that you can't have anymore from the earthquake, like, I don't know, plates. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can clean clothes if you dig them out of a house. It's kind of hard to repair plates, you know? So I imagine it's probably going to be used for boring but necessary things like that.
100%. Like, yeah, even the boring thing is actually vitally important, so...
You get tired of eating off of paper plates after a while.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's it's obviously... Again, you just hope, obviously, everybody can resume as best they can from, obviously, a very unfortunate situation. Obviously, earthquakes is nothing new in Japan, but even then, like, you get a big enough earthquake, it can obviously cause many, many problems, which this did, and obviously it caused a number of problems for sure. So, my hearts go out to everybody in Kumamoto. Hope everything is able to get better moving forward.
Yeah, and there's been a bunch of earthquakes recently in South America as well. There's been the one in Venezuela and then the one in Colombia. Other parts of the world which are also used to earthquakes to an extent, but these are just strong earthquakes. And I know the Venezuela one in particular was quite shallow, which means less rock for it to move through means that there's more energy left for when it starts shaking a building.
Gonna switch over to something that's gonna kick off weird news, even though it's in the news section. Trust me, we got some really strange and crazy news for the weird news section this episode. We're gonna start with the creator Sancha revealing on Twitter that their Yang Can't Live Alone manga is any publication of Square Enix Manga Up service. Sancha stated that the cancellation issues are breakdown in the relationship with Manga Up. So the series ended August 13th with the third part of the 15th chapter. They're now in talks with the editor trying to get the company Square Enix to withdraw the copyright so they continue the manga another way.
I'm bummed about this because I'd been reading that one on the English version of Manga Up at least, and it was solid, you know, like it had potential, hadn't really gone much anywhere yet, but I'm bummed about that.
Yeah, especially even it's only 15 kind of chapters, so it's not really, yeah, it didn't get very far, unfortunately. Obviously, cancellations has happened before in the industry, so this is nothing new. But the one thing that's going to be strange or something to look out for is the fact that this was or is planned to come out in English in September, Volume 1, with Volume 2 slated for December. From Square Enix Manga over here.
Yeah, since Manga Up is a part of Square Enix big. Square Enix, like, all of it.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's no word from the English, the US Square Enix, if this series is continuing. Like, are they just canceling it? Are they... They haven't said anything about the future of the series. It's like nothing, no statement to anybody. So, and then... And unfortunate news, it actually makes it weird for me, because I know, like, if I see updated English cover for Yang Volume 2, do I even share the pre-order links on, as usual, on the social media? But I don't know.
At this point, if they're going up now, I would assume that means it is going to come out.
No, but it also gets to the point that, remember, this series is canceled. Is it any point to sharing anything that's not...
Well, no, I'm saying that, like, if the has the cover image for the second volume come out?
No.
So if it has not already come out and it's going to come out later, I would assume that means that the contract is still valid and there still are plans for it to come out. Like, yes, the series may be incomplete, but you might as well share that it's coming out at all.
Okay.
That is my take on the situation anyway. As somebody who has read and loved many a webcomic which have died unfortunate and early deaths. And I own print copies for some of them.
But yeah, we'll see. Obviously, we'll hear more about this soon enough. And actually, if we see a free preview on Square Enix's manga site, then that might be a sign. But yeah, we'll obviously monitor the situation for this one.
All right, and then we've got a bunch of series which are going on hiatus for multiple reasons.
you should probably.
Oh wait, hang on. I jumped the gun. I thought this was part of it, but sorry. This one is not a hiatus, although similar. Manga creator Hiroya Oku, who did a series like Gantz, revealed in an interview with Courier Japan, published on Tuesday, second week of August, that he plans to retire after he finishes his latest manga, Kanrei Kihime, The Sweet 60 Princess. And in his interview, he said, "No, this is it. I've made up my mind. To be honest, I just don't have the energy to keep drawing anymore. The desire to create is still there, but coming up with a story, drawing it, and keeping that process going, all that takes an enormous amount of energy and stamina. I just don't have the energy to do that anymore." In the back of my mind, I go, are we going to hear about him creating AI manga in like 3 years' time? Whee! Hopefully that voice in the back of my mind is incorrect.
Yeah, I was seeing, I think somebody was saying, I haven't been obviously paying that much attention to him, but I think somebody was saying like he was experimenting with Gen AI. I don't know what Japanese creators and them just loving every new shiny toy.
They are much more permissive about it than some Western creators are, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
I guess my only thought is, obviously, when you know it's time, it is what it is. And you can at least say, like, okay, I created some solid manga, I guess one major hit in Gantz, and then obviously a really solid one in Inuyashiki. We'll see about Gigant. I think that's coming out.
Is that the one with the giant woman? The one where it's like, is this fetish work?
That's the one that's coming out at some point, I think next year. So we'll see what the potential of that one is. But yeah, you can say from a creator standpoint, you kind of knocked it out of the park. Like, that's sometimes, like most, obviously, some other creators can't get to that level. So congrats, I guess, on that. That's all I really have to say. Then you have announced some more, well, I guess we switch from, I guess, retirement positive to, unfortunately, some really sad news and hope for the best. Manga creator Ryuta Amazuke announced last week that they have been diagnosed with cancer. Amazune stated that they will undergo treatment, aim for complete recovery, and they're gonna go on hiatus from commercial manga civilization for a while. So if the name kind of sounds familiar, Dempa/Baku has been publishing the Nano and Karu manga series, so it's just tough to hear, and not you just hope for the best that the treatment's gonna go well, like surgery's gonna go well, and the treatment's gonna go well, the recovery will be nice and go pretty well. That's all we can really hope for.
Yeah, and I don't think they've said which cancer they've been diagnosed with, since some have better recoverability rates than others. There's just no non-crass way to say that. All right, so, okay, now I'm going to talk about more regular hiatuses, because there's a bunch of them. Boruto is taking a one-month break, and so it's going to return in the November issue that's going to ship on September 18th. Once again, I have no idea how some of these magazines name their issues. The Dark Gathering manga is also taking a one-month break, and so that manga is scheduled to return in that magazine's October issue, which will ship on September 4th. Please see my previous statement about this. And then we have a bunch of hiatuses which are explicitly for health reasons, like The Skull Dragon's Precious Daughter manga is going to go on hiatus for half a year. The creator noted that they've been accumulating stress over a long time. They added that despite their editor reducing page counts and lightening their serialization schedule, the effects of stress have never less shown in the manga. Which makes sense since it does have an anime announced, so they're probably involved in that production to a degree. So yeah, just seems like this is probably for the best for their health. Battle in 5 Seconds is going on hiatus with no known return point, also due to author health. The creator, Miyako Kaisawa, says it's reached a point where drawing manga has become difficult, and they've previously had hiatuses in 2024 and through 2020 in 2024, resuming in 2025. Quality Assurance in Another World is going to be on hiatus. He is focusing on recovering from being hospitalized for a hernia, So yeah, I can imagine that he probably does not want to be doing work that revolves sitting in a singular position for long periods of time. So it's going to return at a later date. TBD.
Yep, we'll just have to see.
And, okay, yeah, that's all really, the hiatuses.
That's all the hiatuses. Some, obviously, a lot worse than others. We'll just hope all the creators in bad health can improve moving forward. It's just not, it's just really tough to hear. Obviously, you know about the issues about working in the industry. It's not like everybody's not aware of it, but it still just breaks your heart a little bit anyways. So, hoping for the best for all of them combined.
Yeah, and I even noticed that on Jay Novel Club, it seemed like new volumes of Skull Dragon's Precious Daughter were coming out a bit less frequently, so hearing that they've just been kind of stressed off a whole bunch of things, it's like, okay, yeah, that tracks. Okay, that makes sense. We'll see you in the spring, then.
And as we'll get to the section here, there's actually, we can't even tie that into the situation with the line of artists, but yes, we got a couple of unfortunate deaths that's happened in the last few weeks, although the one I'm going to start with actually happened in March. But we found out recently through the digital summary issue of the SAG-AFTRA recent quarterly magazine, they had a Canadian voice actor, Mac O'Donovan, who's listed as Michael David Donovan. He passed away March 4th. And then a fellow voice actor, Ian James Corlett, made a post about Donovan's death after learning about it from the magazine. He was 72 in March, and he would have turned 73 this year on June 12th. Not too many anime roles, but he did voice Ryoga Hibiki in the original Ranma One-Half anime, Saimori in Ronin Warriors, Zouken Mato in Fate Stay Night, Heaven's Veil, and then he did Master Roshi in an older dub of Dragon Ball. I guess it's the Canadian version of Dragon Ball that I remember watching some time ago, and in Premise and Transformers Cybertron. The mechanical designer, planner, and toy designer Katsushi Murakami died July 20th. It was noted that his health has been poor this year, so yes, unfortunately, it's very unfortunate that it looks like it was a tough year for him in general. So he passed away at 83. He served as a mechanical designer for numerous anime. I didn't list all of them, but some of the notable ones they picked was Shin Tetsujin 28, Gold by Time, Golden Warrior, Machine Robo, Battle Hackers, and Space Adventure Cobra. He designed the cars for the F-Zero Falcon Dentist anime. He also designed the Cho Gopin line of robot toys, with Cho Gopin being the metal. He used to construct the Mecha Mazinger Z. He designed toys for Tokusatsu and Sentai Larger shows, such as Kamen Rider. So, needless to say,
those are some big names right there.
Yeah, some influence for sure. That's a definitely, obviously, you look a long life. Obviously, many contributions to the industry and different types of industries too. So yes, he was surely missed for sure. And as I more or less alluded to earlier about manga creators' health, editors for Square Enix's monthly Shonen Gangan magazine announced that manga artist Yoko Imezu had passed away on July 7th due to kid's cerebral infarction, which is ischemic stroke. Magazine's editor stated that a private viewing was held only by close relatives, and I did a kind of a quick Google search about the ischemic stroke, and I was like, oh wow. I think we're just talking about like stress and everything, and oh wow. That was basically what it kind of seemed like. And obviously it may have been more just that, but that was like, oh man, that's really not what you want to hear. The editor has also announced that Vermilion Gold, like the manga, so this was based off the, I think this should be a, I think it was a light novel?
I was going to ask if it was an original series or if it was based off of something.
No, it was based off a light novel, but I should have checked. I think it's a light novel based on the fact that you have the Koto Amana and Umezu, and the illustrator of the light novel. Maybe it's just based on the manga. I think it was just based on the writer. All right. That's my bad. I should have checked. But yes, the manga basically ended with the magazine July issue on June 12th. The editorial staff added the amount of details regarding the publication of the series, uncovered the chapters at a later date. I was going to speak for the Japan release. I suspect this was so sudden that they probably couldn't even, like, discuss if they wanted to, like, move on or move, like, choose a different partner or anything like that. Like, I think back to the Manchuria Opium Squad situation. But I think they kind of knew with Chicago's health and after discussion that that would be a potential plan that they could do. So that's probably why for this, for Vermilion Gold, they decided to just end it back like that. But yeah, it's just really sad. Like, you don't know how young the artist was, but...
yeah. It sounds like it was not an expected death, and that's sometimes the most tragic ones.
Mm-hmm. Like, you still have more to do, and just like that, it's over.
I am reminded of Lindsey Graham apparently saying to a reporter the night before he died that, "I can't die yet, I've got too much left to do."
So yeah, my sincere condolences to the friends and family of Nokoi Mezu up there with the West well.
And like we said at the top of the show, we didn't have any conventions in the past couple weeks. Major conventions where people are going to be announcing licenses. But we still have a couple of interesting licenses from the past couple of weeks. Shueisha launched the global digital manga platform Manga Million last week in over 100 languages, including English, Chinese, Hindi, Arabic, Spanish, French, Turkish, Tagalog, Korean, Polish, and others. The platform is so named because it has over 1 million pages of translated manga from 400 titles at launch. Shueisha confirmed with ANN that AI translation was not used for this project. However, folks were, you know, looking at the credits that were listed for each manga, and quite a few of them, especially ones that had not been translated before, were listed as being translated by agencies such as Flitto and Blue Horizon, and both of these agencies have writings on, like, their Twitter profiles that say things like AI workflows and stuff like that. So everyone is going, so did these folks use AI? Like, is this a case of, oh, we just, you know, we licensed it from these, or, you know, we paid these folks to translate and we assume they didn't use AI. We didn't use AI. Or is this a case of these agencies not actually using it and just being coy about who was the translator, who was the letterer, who was the editor? Who knows? I am assuming the worst, frankly, because that is kind of how this tends to go.
And you know, unfortunately, I kind of expect the worst with other languages. I think they're definitely using AI for other languages, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely saw people quipping in the ANN forums that there cannot be too many translators who can do, like, Japanese to some of the smaller languages. And there's definitely a disparity in how many titles are translated in each language. You can... go on the website and you can filter a couple of different ways, including by language, and that way you can see, oh, there's like 200 or 400 titles for English, and you get down to some that are like just one title in that language. So yeah, there are a bunch of titles in there that have not been previously available in English legally. Like, I think all the ones you listed here are new in English, Justin. Kochikami, Liar Game, Chibi Maruko-chan, Bartender, Kodocha, Gunjo Nisairin, from the Ichigo 100% person, which, so Justin thinks that is a very funny
display
of duality.
Especially funny because you look at, like, that in Hatsukoi Limited and you compare it to Gunjo Nisairin, like, hey, really? They don't even look the same.
Yeah, there's also a bunch of obscure shoujo on there that I had not heard of before. Like, some of it sounds like it was obscure for a reason, some of it just sounds very boring. But yeah, I went through and I was like, I scrolled down through the entire list of everything listed in English and I clicked on all the ones that looked interesting. I have not read more than like one or two at this point because it is a lot. So yeah, it's an ambitious project. We also aren't sure how long it's going to be online. I think they've said till the end of the year at least, and then has been...
Till the end of December 2027.
Okay, so till the end of 2027, but beyond that, they haven't said they'll take it offline or if it's going to become just a paid app instead of a free thing. It is notable that they decided to make this as a separate app instead of like folding it into Manga Plus, which is also owned by Shueisha and has some of these same titles. it does seem like for series that had previously been translated that they are using existing translations, which makes sense. You know, you're saving some money that way. But yeah, it's like just the potential stink of AI kind of brings you down a little bit from this.
Yeah, like that basically. And unfortunately, it kind of brings up Manga Plus at the same time, because you already know, like, they're the Shueisha and Orange Ink with their
stated
use of AI. Yeah, the Bad Orange. And obviously, we heard about the one-shots that, like, Shueisha, like, a number of... Manga Plus, it's a number of interesting one-shots, but I haven't really touched them because I know, like, they can be translated by Orange, so it's like, I guess I'm not going to bother with those.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a new thing, but then... For a project like this, you'd be like, oh, wow, there's so much manga. We can read it for free, too? That seems amazing. But then you realize, okay, but is this even accurately localizing the property properly? And
that's and you can question. Also see, you can also see how many views each series has on there. So Shueisha is undoubtedly using this as, like, some information on their part for, you know, what actually has interest, you know, to be licensed. But then if people are looking at it going, I really want to read this title, but it's AI, I'm just not going to touch it. You know, it's like you've shot yourself in the foot, looked at your foot, and then shot the other one for good measure.
Yeah, it's like, how are they really going to interpret the response? And then I guess also, like, for other countries, what are the numbers they're looking for? Can they, like, reach the numbers and goals and everything? Like, it's depressing, Ellen. You would think, like, oh, I want to be like, oh, this is so cool. This is all great. And then, like, Koshi Kami, of all things, like, really? Chibi Maruko? Really? Like, we got these type of classic older titles, like, getting translated officially, and it's potentially AI, or at least AI-assisted. And then I know some people on Twitter are going, like,
the monkey's paw okay, even, has
even,
curled.
Even despite, even if somebody has had, like, human translators, like, there are some that do list, like, the names of actual people. They're not getting paid that much, probably. And then
I mean, at that point, can't... the problem is simply that we exist in a capitalist society.
And then we have been told, or at least, like, they have a Comic Speed article that says that a good majority, or at least there is human translators involved in these manga, but they can't, obviously, due contract reasons, can't reveal, like, their names that they did it, but it all just feels more speculation. Like, how much you're getting, is it because you want to hire how much you got paid? And it's a mess, Helen. It's a mess. It sucks because we really want to, like, obviously support, like, obviously things officially, but then officials, like, official publishers just do really crooked things. There's no getting right around it. It's just not doing anything really right, so you just can't really fully embrace it. I'm not sure if I want to judge people, if they want to try it out, but
at least I tried it out, so you can decide right now if you want to judge me.
I am not sure. I mean, I haven't tried it out, because once I heard about the AI thing, and again, knowing Shueisha's, like, past, I was like, yeah, I guess I better. And I already have enough things I got to read in general, it's fine. if the actual legitimate, like, translation comes out, that at least is reportedly done by humans, comes out, that's fine, and I'll check it out. I'll just go with the other manga that I have, or light novels that I have. It's totally fine.
Listen, the things I'm looking at already have so few views that a single more view is not going to really change their minds either way.
The only thing I hear is excuses come out of that mouth of yours.
I mean, what's new?
But yeah, I know some people were judging people about that. I'm like, I get it, but I...
It's the internet. We're all judging each other all the time. Occasionally, yeah, for good reason, even.
I think the problem is, I think this is a more complicated situation, because what is Shueisha looking to... What are they looking for out of this? And if they can take it as a negative, then we may just get a situation where it's literally just poor manga. They just say, no more manga for you. I doubt it'll actually come to that, but...
It's like that reaction... image where it's one guy shoots another guy and then says, like, who could have seen that coming, or something like that.
So yeah, we'll obviously see more, we'll have more thoughts about Manga Millions. I mean, we'll obviously be reporting more about Manga Millions in the future, because they're going to add more titles, from what I understand.
Manga two this millions.
Might, this might be a weird thing to say. If you've noticed, we have not actually, even though they added titles to the service, we haven't like put out any announced about Imakui titles, and I did that for a reason. But I think with this case, I will probably consider adding, if notable enough, Juesha titles. That's going to be on Manga Millions to any licenses moving forward, but we'll see. We'll see.
But now, to talk about something we could all see coming.
I wonder why. So yes, Nakama Press announced exclusively on ANN that they will release Yuji Terajima's Ace of Diamond-based manga as a 3-in-1 omnibus version, starting with the first omnibus volume in March 23, 2027. Shock! Kodansha's letting this actually get released in print. Double shock! Nakama Press is actually going to release this baseball manga that I'm not sure is going to do very well in English. Also, triple shock. Did we hear about this months ago?
Yeah, because the listings went live on Barnes & Noble 2 months ago on June 16th.
Not just Barnes & Noble, Brooks & Million, Amazon, pretty much any retailer you got. It's already on there.
Yeah, people started noticing it on June 16th, so it probably went live on or around that day because the Daya fans are small, but they are devoted.
Mm-hmm. And that was not even the only, funny enough, they announced this as an exclusive title, and I'm guessing there's going to be more exclusive announcements maybe this week, because it's not the only one that Nakama Press is going to bring out next year. That I guess I won't share here, but yes, that also leaked a couple months ago, so it's like, if you just throw away, I had a mini, it's not really a debate, but I just, that's just lying, I lied the hell out about, well, it could be an exclusive because it wasn't officially announced yet, but like, 2 months?
Yeah. Also, they are using the Kodansha translation, since folks noted in the ANN forums that it is completely translated on K-Manga already, and the translator listed by Nakama Press is the same translator. Different letterer, though, so it sounds like they, maybe they didn't, like, license the translation, so maybe they're just having the same person, like, redo their work and putting it back in, but, same translator for both versions, so.
Yeah, and I assume it's also based on the digital volume releases for this series, so. Yeah, I guess aside from the, I guess just they have their own exclusive like print letterer for their company, so they decided to go with that. But yes, after all these years, I've been seeing so many people be like, "Ace of Diamond, where you at? Where you at?" And it's coming finally. Nachi Hayafu's got to be next, right?
Come on, Kodansha, you've got that print on demand now. Like, you just finished up Teppu on there. You've got a free slot.
I'm already going to leak this, Helen, but they put it on their website already. They're going to have a print title coming for their Kodansha print. I assume their Kodansha print called Life Separate First, How to Grow Your Love. And that's a 20-plus volume series. So it's like, if you ought to release that, you could totally release Chihaya Furu. Just saying. You can do it, Kodansha. You can do it.
And then online comic store Sendai Books announced that they've licensed two manga, which is their first licensings as a publisher, both slated for release in October. Natsuko Ishisuyo's Amazon Kiss and Sian Ozen's Nevermind Come Together. I noticed that we have linked to a tweet you did, Justin, not an ANN article. Did you just like get a random press release in the inbox?
I did indeed get a press release in the inbox.
Had you heard of these people before, or did they just release you?
No, I have. They've been around, and they did announce a few months, maybe last month, that they were announcing some manga. So I knew it was coming. I just didn't know they were email the account or email the OSG.
Sometimes you just wake up in the morning and you find amazing emails in your account.
But no, it's cool. You know, again, we're in a situation where we're just
getting... We're not complaining. We're just saying that sometimes that is the state of the world.
Yeah, and we're getting just more publishers. Hopefully they can stick around. That's always, I guess, a good thing. Just, again, more variety in the industry. That's always good. Kadokawa, they announced it a while ago. They announced the global launch of Ryo Mizuno and Studio White's web team, Record of Lotus 4, The Necromancer Queen. It's called The Queen of Death in English. This is available in more than 150 countries and regions worldwide via LINE Manga, eBook of Japan, and global Webtoon platforms. So yeah, if you go to Webtoon, you can read, I guess, a version of the Record of Lotus War, but in Webtoon format. Yay. And then the Ocean Waves novel has been licensed by HarperCollins. They're going to release it under Harper via imprint. And in 2027, Helen, I can finally figure out, or finally find out, what did Ghibli change compared to the novel? Or what they change?
Yeah, I remember.
Find out.
I've seen Ocean Waves once. I know it was only licensed fairly recently. I forget if I saw it after that or if the Japanese embassy just showed it anyway with English subtitles. But yeah, that is probably the most obscure work that Ghibli's done, so... And considering that, like, everything they do is, like, an adaptation of a book that they've heavily changed, I imagine people are going to find out that it's been heavily changed. That is my prediction. Alright, and then on the digital side of licenses, Manga Up added two new titles, or... Yes, they added Midorikawa's Transmigrated to the Northern Frontier, and Majisawa's How to Feed a Delinquent Boy. Over on K-Manga, they've added Yuno Yozokura and Yosuke Sano's Camp Master Extraordinaire. And then Manga Plus has added Simulpubs of... I mean, these other two are also... those other three are probably Simulpubs as well, basically. Manga Plus has specifically said these are Simulpubs. Anyway, they have licensed Sango Honda's Finding the Invisible Star and Shintaro Tengen's Mikoto Haku. So go read your digital manga, everybody. It might even be good for you.
All right, time to move on to some of the streaming news that's happened. Not too much streaming news, but I guess we got some ones to look out for. And then really, this one I'm announcing is technically more of a theater, but at some point, it will be streaming on Crunchyroll. So yeah, they announced that they're going to be main home distributor for Makoto Shinkai's unannounced film around the world, excluding most of Asia. Again, this hasn't been, like, we don't know the name of the film just yet, just that Shinkai's working on it, but that when it's ready, Crunchyroll will handle the rights to it, and also by extension, Sony Pictures will handle distributing and everything. So look out for all that. Maybe late 2027, 2028, I guess, but we'll have to find out soon enough. Or I say this, but watch, we got Anime New York City happening this week, weekend they announced it. Look at that. Just look at that. We have the Mobile Suit Gundam Hathaway, the Sorcery of Nymph Circe. This should be the second Gundam Hathaway film. That's going to be on Netflix at the end of August. It should be sub and dub. And then Oceanville. They're going to add the Miru Tights short anime series on their 18 plus service. Yay.
And now, the weird news. Folks might remember last time we had no weird news. That is not this week. So this one, somewhere between weird news and news, from the local news channel, I think it's KXAN is how you say it. A man from Houston, Texas has been charged with a third-degree felony count of a terroristic threat against a public servant after allegedly leaving a profanity-ridden voicemail to the governor's office related to anime. We say allegedly because that is how you describe it when someone has not been, like, found guilty. But, like, we totally have the voicemail. Like, the local news organization quoted it. As the local TV channel has summed up, it remains unclear what bill the man is referring to in his voicemail, but it may be related to a 2023 Texan law that required adult websites to verify a site as visitor's age for allowing access, which led to some sites blocking access to devices from Texas, or the recently passed Texas Senate Bill 2420, which requires app stores to similarly verify a user's age before allowing downloads. The thing is that the thing that makes this funny is that the news service mentioned that they checked a whole bunch of, like, you know, the usual streaming services like Crunchyroll, Netflix, and they mentioned one site that I hadn't heard of before, so I went looking for it. And, like, it's totally, like, a pirate site.
How did they get fooled by that? How?
I'm guessing whoever was doing the reporting was not an anime fan, and so didn't realize that...
Yeah, we could definitely tell.
And didn't realize that, like, there are some titles on there, like... I saw, like, Magi Lumiere is on there, and I'm like, no, that one is an Amazon Prime exclusive. Like, it's definitely not supposed to be on here. And, like, I was scrolling through the website, and I was like, this is definitely not legit. And so I'm posting about this on Blue Sky, and I'm seeing this with no problems at all from my laptop, using Chrome with, like, 5 different ad blockers installed. But, like, a couple of my followers were checking out the site, you know, because they also wanted to know what the hell is this site, were getting pop-ups saying, you cannot access this unless you have a VPN. My followers were not in Texas. I think at least one of them was on a phone. So now I'm just like, what is going on here? Like, maybe this dude was on his phone in Texas and got that pop-up and thought it was because of the laws and not that this website is fine otherwise.
Wait, actually, from my interpretation, I think just the local news article, news station thing is messed up. they mentioned...
Oh, no. No, like, I think they messed up by mentioning that particular pirate site.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm thinking.
But, like, when my friends and I went to look at it, I was able to access it just fine, but some of my friends did, in fact, get a pop-up from that site saying you needed a VPN, you know, even though they were not in Texas. So I'm like, so maybe this guy in Texas also got that pop-up on the site, making him think it wasn't that the laws had gone into effect, when it really just seems to have been, like, some weird luck of the draw.
No, I'm only saying, I don't think he ever went to that site. I think the news article was just speculating, like the sites he was talking about, either Crunchyroll, HiDive, and then they just throw out Yomi for some bizarre reason. That's my thinking. That's how I read it. And then the A&M forums were speculating that he probably had something through Google Play, which requires login and everything.
Yeah.
So that's my thinking. That's what I was thinking. So that's the other, like, okay, obviously the violent threat part, that's a good
one. Yeah, that part is not cool. The rest of this...
Yeah, the rest of it is never heard of Yomi until this article. Like this, that's just weird. How are we finding random services like this?
I guess they probably just typed in, like, anime streaming site into Google or something like that, but yeah, unsurprisingly, the streaming site named after Hell is not legal. Very, very surprising there.
I'm actually searching right now, if I Google it right now, official anime streaming services. Will Yomi pop up on the first page?
Okay, if you type in free anime streaming, it is in fact the first hit.
Okay. I tried to be like official, but...
Like, oh god, no. I don't think that's what they were typing in. You know? And if you type in just anime streaming, it's the second hit. Yeah.
Local news station in Texas, why are you trying to search for anime for? What are you trying to do?
You know, here? I mean, like I said, if you just type in anime streaming, the first hit is Crunchyroll and the second one is Yomi. So that might have been it.
Gonna move on to another disturbing news report that came out recently, where a woman under the anonymous Saint Jane Doe has sued the Pokemon Company International, claiming that his former engineering director, Ben Tsai, has allegedly hidden cameras in various public bathrooms, including one in the company's U.S. office in Bellevue, Washington.
Can people please just stop being weird about this? Like,
it's not great.
Can you just, like, pay somebody on their OnlyFans if you want to see videos like this? Can you not?
I feel like this is a case where, like, there's a reason, there's 18-plus stuff that you can pay for legally, and maybe people will judge you about it, but look, you're paying for it, it's legal, I will not judge. It's obviously much safer to do that than just really just being a... Why would you even do this in a public bathroom? What is wrong with you? Why?
I mean, I can only imagine that even the act of illicitly placing cameras is probably part of it for this dude. But yeah, I just can't help but think, if you catch a child on there, then it all gets even worse, because we take that shit even more seriously. Like... I have heard that apparently, even in prisons, the people who have committed, like, child sexual assault are, like, despised by the other inmates. Like, we're all pretty much in agreement about this, so just, I don't know, I guess the voyeurism itself is part of the kink.
Yeah.
I know people say don't kink shame, but no. I'm gonna kink shame all y'all aloes.
Mm-hmm. And then now to get to Tsai, he has not apparently been with the company since January, because he was reportedly charged with first-degree voyeurism back in January. And And after, I guess, more research, or I guess more investigation, he was charged with more things because he was dealing and possessing sexually explicit depictions of minors. The charges indicate that he's also recorded videos using hidden cameras in bathrooms in a Safeway store and his own home. I'm not even sure what to keep going. The Kirkland Police Department, in doing more investigation, discovered that he had hundreds of videos with adult nudity and child sexual abuse. Apparently, attorney Bradley Brosh has stated my client has entered and will enter pleas of not guilty to all charges. I think you have a losing case here, buddy. I think just give up, buddy. Just give up.
Like, I know that everybody is entitled, you know, to representation in court. That is an important thing in America. However, I feel like sometimes your client should not be pleading not guilty.
Also, I think this is also, I think this is just a case where they just had the short end of the stick. Somebody's got to represent it, and just Bradley's like, yeah, you just have to do it. Darn it. That's my only guess and my only hope. Otherwise, everything about this is just really just disturbing and disgusting. Yeah, I guess the question is, how much did the Pokemon Company International know? And I mean, they did let him go because of all these charges, but like, could they have done better? I guess that's what the why should the lawsuit come down? So we'll have to see what's gonna happen moving forward. So I guess if we hear more news, we'll report it for sure, or we'll discuss it at least.
Yeah, and then this one is one that I had totally missed. So, the production committee for the upcoming Michan and Miss Yamada anime issued a statement regarding criticism over the anime's announcement and how it might affect people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So the ANN article is long and not very skimmable, but as Justin has summarized it, the use of Michan has been questioned by those online as a way to disparage people, generally girls and women with intellectual or developmental disabilities. It also was announced on the 10th anniversary of the Sagamihara stabbings, where a former reportedly abusive employee went to a care home for the disabled and killed 19 and injured 26 more people. And so on Twitter, there have been questions about the content in general and whether it's being done in good taste or if it's more misery torture porn. So yeah, this feels like one of those things where it's like a tricky subject matter, especially since the original manga depicts the title character Michan exhibiting signs of intellectual and developmental disabilities, not formally diagnosed, but she works as a cabaret club hostess and later in delivery health, which are both fields of work associated with sex work in Japan. And so you've got a character who is potentially has developmental disabilities working, you know, in industries that are known to be sexually exploitative, and it's like, yeah, tough combination in any situation.
And the main combination is, apparently, I was reading the forums, this actually happens in the very first chapter, so it basically sets up the story of the series. She dies. She gets killed.
Does she reincarnate, or is she a ghost?
That's it. The whole main point is to go over, I mean, I obviously haven't read it, but I guess that's setting up the whole story of Michan, and I think this is also why this has been heavily criticized
online. So, like, what is the plot of the story then? Is it somebody, like, rediscovering her life after she's dead, or?
I assume it's more, like, going through the backstory of her. That's my guess, but again, I wouldn't know until Seven Seas releases it later this year. If I'm interested in reading it. I mean, I'll see a free preview of it eventually on Bookwalker. But yeah, that's basically what it comes down to. I was very hesitant to, well, okay, I won't say hesitant. I knew I was going to include this in the script, but
trying to figure out why we put it here, the weird news is an anime getting backlash.
Yeah.
Upon its really very announcement before it's even aired. That's more unusual.
Yeah. Like really, this only, that the kind of thing kind of remind me of, it was a long time ago. New Life Plus, Young and Another World, where that got announced as an anime, and then the authors very notable descriptions of certain people popped up on Twitter, and that got lots of people just saying, bro. And then also the content of the story itself then made you realize, wait a minute, hold up here. And then that got the voice actors and the anime, some of the staffing to be like, this is not right. And eventually that got canceled. So yes, that type of backlash has not been seen, I feel like, in a while. We don't really get that happening in for most things nowadays. So the fact that this happened for Mi-chan, what is going on with the series? We haven't obviously checked the series out. We just know obviously bits and pieces, and it's kind of the same thing on Twitter. Like, I was just seeing people who are just wondering just what in the world was happening, or what's with the true story about this. So yeah, it's really just a case of touch. We'll have to really see. Obviously, the production committee feels that they still feel like they can depict it in a manner that obviously tells like a complete story without demeaning anybody. That's the case. We'll just really have to see, honestly. not much really to say aside from that. Obviously, if anything moving forward happens to it, we'll comment on it, but yeah, not much to add from here, I think.
But we're going to end on a slightly lighter note.
Because we kind of
Actually, a much lighter note.
You gotta have to leave it a lighter note, because we talked about so much depressing stuff in this episode. So, the fact that we get to actually bring up One Piece and SpongeBob. Wait, what? What? Why? Why are they collaborating this time? Well, thanks to McDonald's. This is actually kind of a crazy combination. So, the One Piece franchise is going to collaborate with SpongeBob SquarePants for McDonald's Happy Meal in multiple territories around the world. So this month, if you stop by a McDonald's, you'll, for some reason, have One Piece, imagery combined with SpongeBob imagery. I'm just like, why? Why do we do this? We got SpongeBob with a straw hat. Why do we have SpongeBob with a... We have the Happy Meal as a pirate flag. Why? Why do we do this to ourselves? What One Piece fan wants this? I guess all of them.
Plenty of One Piece fans, I think.
I guess.
And Justin is quipping in the script, who will McDonald's collaborate with next? And I know that my Twitter feed was very much abuzz the other day when the Hello Kitty Godzilla collab was announced. And yeah, I kind of want a couple of those figures. Like the My Melody Mothra is very cute. Or the Caropay King Ghidorah. Like, does McDonald's let you, like, just pay for the Happy Meals and then choose your figures these days? Or do only some stores do that? Is it kind of like a loot box situation still? I remember that's how it was when I was a kid.
Literally, the only time I go to McDonald's is to get their milkshake. That's it. I don't really get anything else from them. I have no clue.
So you're saying that their milkshake brings you to the yard? I can hear Justin just closing out the program right now, so I think we better wrap this up, folks.
It's time to wrap this phone up, please. Please close this out. I have nothing more to add. Nothing. No promotion. No comments on Nomi. No DOSG. No, I can't do it anymore. Just
you left yourself open to that one.
What?
All right, folks. So, if you want to find me just making more questionable comments online, you can find me over on Blue Sky at Wondering Dreamer. The other podcast I co-host is called Manga in Your Ears. Yes, I'm making questionable comments on that one as well. Next episode's not out yet because we all got busy and had vacations. It's coming soon, though. Don't worry. And you can just look that up on any of your podcasting services and find us there at under the name Manga in Your Ears. Our Blue Sky account and website are Taiku Podcast, spelled T-A-I-I-K-U Podcast. Until next time, then, folks. See ya.
Bye. I'll have some Anime New York City stuff, hopefully.